This show furnished by Dual Diagnosis Treatment Center.
Welcome to In Your Right Mind, a weekly discussion of behavioral health issues that affect our lives. We all have issues, so let's start talking.
Welcome to In Your Right Mind, a weekly discussion of behavioral health issues that affect our lives. We all have issues, so let's start talking. My name is Stephanie Wilder Taylor.
And I'm Dr. Tanmay Sharma.
I caught you unawares, Dr. Sharma.
Oh, that's okay.
We're starting our show, and we're going to focus our attention on relationships this week. But instead of focusing on the love and romance of Valentine's Day, we're going to focus on when relationships aren't all lovey-dovey. If you've ever been in an unpredictable and chaotic relationship that feels like you're taking a ride on a never-ending roller coaster, you might know what I'm talking about.
But just in case you're wondering, we are talking about unpredictable and chaotic relationships of people with borderline personality disorder. It's a disorder of extremes that's characterized by drastic mood swings, depression, irritability, uncontrollable anger, impulsiveness, and intense fears of abandonment. I can imagine it would be very confusing to be in such a relationship.
Yes.
So, Stephanie, do we know people that sound like this?
I do, because coincidentally, our first guest, I have her book on my shelf. To discuss this topic, we are joined by Dr. Janice Webb. She's a licensed psychologist and leading expert in childhood emotional neglect. She's the best-selling author of two books, Running on Empty and Running on Empty No More, Transform Your Relationships. She created the first online program dedicated to helping people recover from their childhood emotional neglect called Fuel Up for Life, and she runs her own psychology practice in Boston, Massachusetts.
Welcome to you, Dr. Webb, and thanks for joining us this evening for the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very happy to be here.
For our listeners, you know, people kind of throw this word around, it's bandied around, say, oh, you're borderline. And it's entered into the general vocabulary. But as a clinician, you would use it under certain circumstances. And I gave a little bit of a description of somebody with borderline personality. We'd like to make the distinction between people with traits and people with a disorder. So the field is yours. Go ahead. Tell our listeners, what is borderline personality and borderline personality disorder?
Borderline personality disorder is more than just someone who has mood swings or is difficult to get along with.
Mm-hmm.
Although both of those do, you know, are definitely a part of the disorder. But when you have borderline personality disorder, you feel like the world is very unpredictable around you. People with borderline personality have very intense relationships that are either very on or very off.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we'll go back and forth between on and off. They have mood swings that are severe. They have difficulty being just angry because when they get angry, it's more like rage. It's a lot of extreme emotion, unpredictable emotion, and they don't have very good control over their impulses, so they can act very impulsively as well. For example, if you're in a relationship with someone who has borderline personality, they may put you on a pedestal and worship you one day, and the next day you completely fall from grace and they want nothing to do with you and just are disgusted by you. So it can be a very difficult experience to be in a relationship with someone who has this disorder. Whether it's a family member, romantic relationship, it's very challenging.
Do they have insight into this, that they are changing their perspective of you, even though you are the same person that you were yesterday?
That's the difficult thing about borderline personality disorder, is that no, to them, they don't realize that they are reacting to their own inner emotions and emotional perceptions. They feel that they are reacting to reality and to the real person. So in their minds, the way that they make sense of this is, yesterday I thought you were wonderful, but now I see the truth is that you're horrible.
It's a personality disorder of extremes, right? I'm sure that makes it a little bit hard to diagnose.
Yeah, it does get misdiagnosed as other things, and sometimes people who are, say, highly sensitive or have some mood swings or bipolar disorder, for example, get diagnosed with borderline. And so it can be tricky. I think it's very, you know, the word is so overused. It's applied to just people who are, you know, a little moody or, you know, like I said, hard to get along with. And it's really not meant to be used that way. It's a dangerous term for lay people to throw at anyone.
So are there a lot of different symptoms that they have to, is there a whole checklist that they have to have all of them to officially be borderline?
Well, in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, there are 9 criteria listed, and I think they have to meet 5 or 6 of those. And basically, they're just intense relationships, fear of abandonment, dissociation during traumatic situations, frequent depression and mood swings, underlying identity issues, a deep feeling of emptiness and boredom, impulsive behavior, suicidal ideation or thought combined with self-harm, and intense anger. So those are what's listed in the DSM.
And is there a difference between a personality disorder and a mental illness?
Oh, boy, that's a good question. A personality disorder is a form of mental illness, but if you think about what most people think of as a true mental illness, it would be something that's more psychotic or caused by genetic, like maybe bipolar disorder or schizophrenia or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that most mental health professionals would call bipolar disorder a mental illness.
Because there's also a lack of insight, as you'd stated earlier.
Yes, exactly. But the great thing about borderline personality is that people who have it through therapy and through the right kinds of treatment, a therapy relationship that are healthy, can start to, you know, get a little distance and see that they can start to develop that inner voice or the sort of mind's eye that's watching and saying, wait a minute, this is you reacting to your emotion. It's not, this person didn't really change overnight. So they can develop that kind of awareness, which is really good.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to In Your Right Mind with Dr. Tanmoy Sharma, and we're talking about borderline personality disorder. How do you get borderline personality disorder? If it's not a mental illness where it doesn't have a genetic component, what causes it?
We think it does have a genetic component. We think that it's a combination of being born with a very sensitive emotional makeup, what might be called high sensitivity. Many, many, many people are born with high sensitivity. And so the other factor that really plays in is the kind of family that you were born into. So if you're born with this very sensitive emotional makeup and you are born into a family that has a lot of unpredictable behavior that does not make you feel emotionally safe, that punishes you for having feelings, that ignores your true self and requires you to act like the way that they want you to act versus your natural self. Those are the basic ingredients for borderline personality disorder.
Looks like the sort of level of heritability, which is kind of the genetic component, if you like, is between 52 and some 68% for borderline personality disorder. So there is a reasonable genetic component. And I guess for children that are born with that heritability or with the propensity to develop borderline personality disorders, environmental factors can significantly delimit or exacerbate them into adults with borderline.
Yes, absolutely. But it's also possible if you're born with a genetic disposition that if you get the right parenting that is predictable and loving and holds you accountable and teaches you emotion skills, that you won't turn out with borderline personality at all. So it's a mixture.
So what gets them into trouble? Is it the sort of fear of abandonment, the impulsivity, the suicidal behavior that they have?
Yeah. You know, I think it's really important to realize that people with borderline are in pain. And they can seem like they're not in pain, like they are just angry or they're mean, or people with borderline personality get labeled as difficult to work with and very unpleasant. But actually, they are people who are in a lot of pain and they're just trying to manage and they lack skills. And so this is what really gets them into trouble, is that they don't have the ability to soothe themselves and manage their feelings the way that the rest of us do. If we were taught that in childhood, then we have those skills, and the borderline person didn't have that advantage. So their emotions just drive them. And they are not at the wheel of their own car in their life. Their emotions are at the wheel. that can get them into all kinds of trouble. You know, they feel empty one night, so they go to a bar and find someone who and develop a really very rapidly forming relationship that is abusive, and they'll stay in it way longer than they should and then have a crisis. You know, it's the impulsivity, the lack of ability to self-soothe, being driven by this deep feeling of emptiness and need, and yet a great fear of being abandoned. And it's a hard way to live.
I remember a couple of patients when I used to see patients. There was almost psychotic-like perceptual distortions, lapses in reality testing. I wonder if you have come across people like that who have a diagnosis of borderline personality disorder.
I'm not sure what the statistics are in terms of how many people with borderline end up having some psychosis or loss of touch with reality, but I know that it's fairly common for someone with severe borderline personality disorder to either become somewhat paranoid and start to feel like people are after them, or to just kind of dissociate from reality. And that can be because it's the only coping skill they have, right? They're upset and they don't have the ability to cope, so they just kind of dissociate and disappear. It's sort of like the ultimate form of denial. This isn't happening.
So interesting.
And that can also look psychotic.
We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll break down the dysfunctional relationships of individuals with borderline personality disorder. You're listening to In Your Right Mind with Dr. Tanmoy Sharma, and we'll be right back.
It had taken over my life. It needed to be stopped.
Addiction doesn't discriminate. At Sovereign Health, we target underlying conditions that occur along with addiction. Our clinical experts provide both individual and group therapy and retrain the addicted brain through cognitive enhancement.
Getting treatment at Sovereign, it's what gave me my life back.
Call 866-201-8710. That's 866-201-8710. Or visit us at sovhealth.com. Nearly half of all Americans experience a mental illness at some point in their lives. Sovereign Health offers treatment programs for depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, post-traumatic stress disorder, eating disorders, and other mental health issues, with an individualized treatment plan that meets your needs. Call Sovereign Health at 866-202-0011. That's 866-202-0011. Or visit us at sovhealth.com.
We didn't know what to do. We were at a loss.
Sovereign Health's Rancho San Diego facility provides individualized mental health, substance abuse, and dual diagnosis treatment to teens in a safe, nurturing environment.
Everybody there seemed really caring about.
Don't lose sight on finding the best help for your child. Call Sovereign Health at 866-202-0308. That's 866-202-0308. Or visit us at sovhealth.com.
News, talk, evolve. 790 KABC.
Welcome back to In Your Right Mind with Dr. Tanmoy Sharma. I'm Stephanie Wilder Taylor, and we've been discussing the common impairments in the self and relationship functioning in individuals with borderline personality disorders with Dr. Janice Webb.
Dr. Webb, if we turned our attention to one of the primary features of borderline personality disorder, this pervasive pattern of intense and chaotic interpersonal relationships. It's said that the relationships of individuals with borderline personality disorder are often like being on a roller coaster due to their unstable and intense emotions, the mood swings, the angry outbursts, and chronic abandonment fears, and impulsive and irrational behaviors. Are people with borderline personality disorder, given all these problems, able to sustain any relationships?
Yes, often they are. And keep in mind, this disorder is on a continuum. So there are people who are diagnosable borderline, but also continue to be very high functioning. Mm-hmm. Well, fairly high functioning. And then there are people with borderline personality who are, you know, have a lot of difficulty getting out of a psychiatric hospital because they live with so much dysfunction. But it's definitely possible for a borderline person to have a relationship, especially if they get into some kind of treatment and start to recognize their emotions for what they are and start, you know, become better at determining the difference between what's really going on and what they're feeling.
I have a feeling that people, well, I know that people with borderline personality disorder are tricky, though. So I imagine that for somebody just getting into a relationship with somebody with this disorder, it could feel really exciting at first, right? Because I'm sure when you first meet that person, you're the most amazing person ever, and it's very intense and probably loving until you've crossed the person.
Yes, exactly. You can feel very drawn to that pedestal position, because the other person, the borderline person, will admire you so much, and that feels really great. And I also think that, you know, one of the things that I write and talk about a lot is childhood emotional neglect. That's my main specialty. And people who grow up with childhood emotional neglect are more vulnerable to being in relationships with people with borderline, because the borderline person supplies all the emotion. And so for someone who's living with a dearth of emotion, they can be attracted to that intensity, and it can feel exciting, and it can feel like it's finally providing the intensity and excitement that's lacking in their lives.
But then I'm sure it's more dangerous for them too, because if they didn't have the nurturing that they needed as kids, then when the partner with borderline turns on them, it could be even more damaging, right? Because it could kind of affirm their unlovable feeling that they have inside.
Oh, yes. And it also can make them more vulnerable, because then they feel even more like they have to get it back. So I think that's the trap that a person can fall in, is not recognizing that their borderline partner is really reacting to their own emotions and not to you. And you get caught up in trying to seek that pedestal feeling unconsciously, and, you know, needing to get it back when it's taken away. And it can give the borderline person a lot of power in the relationship.
So let's go back to the childhood and your area of specialty. Is there anything that is kind of pre-borderline? So can we identify pre-borderline children that perhaps they fail to learn accurate ways of identifying feelings, or to accurately attribute motives in themselves or others, so-called, you know, failures in mentalization?
Yeah, that is a really good question. And I think it's hard to see borderline in younger children, because young children don't have control over their emotions anyway, mm-hmm. because they haven't learned the skills yet. So it's funny, because an adolescent can look like a borderline sometimes when they're in the process of learning what they need to learn about how to understand and manage their own emotions and how to deal with relationships. But I think that, you know, it is possible to, there's this whole big controversy about whether it's okay to label an adolescent a borderline. And the main thinking is no, it is not, because an adolescent can, you know, can just go through that phase where they look like it. But I think if, you know, when kids, any children who aren't responded to emotionally enough by their parents, and aren't taught the emotion skills, mm-hmm. are going to be more at risk for developing a personality disorder, including borderline.
If you're just tuning in right now, you're listening to In Your Right Mind with Dr. Tanmoy Sharma, and we're talking with Janice Webb, who's a licensed psychologist and an expert in the area of childhood emotional neglect. We're talking about borderline personality disorder.
Well, it looks like borderline personality disorder is found in about 2-4% of our population. I was wondering about the environmental factors. We talked about the genetic factors that might lead to borderline personality disorder. These children that are, say, pre-borderline, they may fail to develop basic mental capacities that constitute a stable sense of self, and make themselves or others understandable, or, you know, that make people understandable and predictable in a way. What about the theory that emphasized the critical role of an invalidating environment? This occurs when a child is led to believe that his or her feelings, thoughts, or perceptions are not real or don't matter. And what about that kind of environment?
Yes. So the purest form of childhood emotional neglect is when the parents ignore the child's emotions. And they may be loving and providing in every other way, but they just simply don't respond to the child's emotions. And then, you know, you have it, you know, again, it's sort of a continuum where the parents may, you know, react negatively to the child's emotions or misread them, and then add on to that that the parent judges the child for having her emotions, and then take that a little bit further, and the parent actively invalidates the child's emotions. And that extreme end of that continuum is what causes the child to develop borderline personality. And I can explain why that is. It's because our emotions are our most deeply personal biological expression of who we are. And so if your parents are punishing you for being who you are, for having emotions, the message is, you know, I'm just bad. My emotions are bad. My feelings are bad. I'm bad. And the child sort of splits off who he really is. His emotions and his true self just becomes kind of splintered off. And the child just tries to be what the parent needs him to be. And that is the setup for borderline personality disorder, because then you go forward into your adult life, not only with your feelings split off so that they're just kind of running rampant and driving the car and you have no control over them, you also didn't get to learn any skills at all about how to, you know, recognize, name, express, share, or connect using your emotions. And so you're missing all of that as well. And you feel deep down like you're unlovable, and you know, you just kind of feel like you're living in quicksand.
Is there anything else that adds to, you know, I'm wondering, if you are raised in such an environment, what makes some be attracted to people with borderline and some actually have borderline? Is there any way to determine that? Is there any extra risk factors that cause the person to actually develop the BPD as opposed to just, you know, be vulnerable to other people with that personality?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, part of it is genetics and how emotionally sensitive you are when you're born. Part of it has to do if you're living in this kind of environment at home, but you have a best friend who you end up staying at their house a lot, and you see a healthy family, and you start to sort of feel like you're part of their family, and you get that kind of healthy influence. Or if you have some adult in your life, like an aunt or an uncle or a cousin or someone who sees you for who you are and starts validating the real you, that can do a lot of, you know, a lot of healing work that prevents the full-blown borderline personality.
Right.
If the child gets into therapy in time, you know, there are just so many factors.
Right. Now, once you have borderline personality disorder, and I know we were talking about the fact that it's hard to see it in yourself. So if you're the kind of person who has this disorder and you found a partner who thinks it's always their fault for your behavior, how do you figure out that you have it? What makes you decide that you need help and, you know, open up to a therapist?
I think for a lot of people with borderline, it's when they actually, it's sort of like with substance abuse, it's when you hit bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So it's when you lose that person and you realize you don't have anyone in your life to help you and you feel completely lost and alone. A lot of times, sadly, it's through a suicide attempt, because when a person with borderline really hits bottom, they often become suicidal and will either make a gesture or, you know, unfortunately, a large percentage of people, you know, much larger than the general population, I shouldn't say large, but larger than the general population, do end up committing suicide.
Wow.
So.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, we need to take another break, but when we come back, we'll have much more about borderline personality disorder with Dr. Tanmoy Sharma and Dr. Janice Webb. You're listening to In Your Right Mind, brought to you by Sovereign Health. We'll be right back.
Trauma can have a negative effect on your mental health and well-being. At Sovereign Health, our clinicians create an individualized program that addresses trauma, substance misuse, and mental health difficulties while promoting strength and mental wellness. Call Sovereign Health at 866-201-9702. That's 866-201-9702, or visit us at sovhealth.com.
Are you or a loved one suffering from an eating disorder? At Sovereign Health, we believe these brain diseases that strain people's lives should not define them. Let us help you heal in a safe, nurturing environment with an individualized treatment plan that has your unique qualities and meets your treatment needs. Call Sovereign Health at 866-202-0209. That's 866-202-0209. Or visit us online at sovhealth.com.
We didn't know what to do. We were at a loss.
Sovereign Health's Rancho San Diego facility provides individualized mental health, substance abuse, and dual diagnosis treatment to teens in a safe, nurturing environment.
Everybody there seemed really caring about.
Don't lose sight on finding the best help for your child. Call Sovereign Health at 866-202-0308. That's 866-202-0308. Or visit us at sovhealth.com.
Talk Radio 790 KABC News Update. I'm Steve Cumming. One of the first people indicted by special counsel Robert Mueller is cutting a deal. Marlis Majerus has the story.
Political consultant Rick Gates, also an associate of former Trump campaign chief Paul Manafort, is expected to plead guilty to charges related to the Russia investigation within the next few days. That according to the Los Angeles Times. Gates reportedly will also agree to testify against Manafort. The two were accused of money laundering and other charges over their consulting work in Ukraine. Gates' guilty plea will reportedly result in a substantially lighter sentence, though he's still expected to serve some jail time. Marlis Majerus, Washington.
KABC SoCal weather. Tonight we'll see a winter weather watch. Snow likely on the 5 and 14 freeways and a 20% chance of rain spreading into the coastal areas tomorrow. It'll be bitter cold tonight in the mountains. More news coming up and continuous coverage on KABC.com. I'm Steve Cumming, Talk Radio 790, KABC News.
We are back with In Your Right Mind with Dr. Tanmoy Sharma. I'm Stephanie Wilder-Taylor, and we've been talking about borderline personality disorder with Dr. Janice Webb, a licensed psychologist and leading expert in the area of childhood emotional neglect, and she's the best-selling author of Running on Empty and Running on Empty No More, Transform Your Relationships. But now joining us is Julie Fast, who is a leading expert on the topics of bipolar disorder, depression, and schizoaffective disorder, and a best-selling author of Loving Someone with Bipolar Disorder, Take Charge of Bipolar Disorder, Get It Done When You're Depressed, Bipolar Happens, and The Health Cards Treatment System for Bipolar Disorder. That's a lot of books.
That's a lot of books.
Congratulations. Julie, welcome to the show.
Hello, thanks. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. Let's turn our attention to the high prevalence of comorbidity seen in individuals with borderline personality disorder as well as bipolar disorder. Are you able to speak to that?
I can. And the way I always start out with this is talking a little bit about the difference between a mood disorder, which is bipolar, versus what we call borderline or personality disorder. It is, I think, pretty, and you know, anybody can cut in here and tell me their opinions as well, but it's pretty well agreed upon that bipolar disorder tends to be very genetic, runs in families, it's not trauma-based, and bipolar disorder is a mood disorder that affects a person's ability to regulate their mood. So we get depression, mania, anxiety, psychosis, but the difference between bipolar disorder and borderline is that bipolar is episodic and doesn't always have a known trigger. In other words, it's not trauma-based. And also, we come and go out of episodes. So even though we share a lot of the symptoms that go with borderline, bipolar will come and go and the person stays stable in between. Whereas with borderline, as we know, tends to be personality-oriented and more fixed and affecting a person on more long-term than the episodic mood swings of bipolar. So comorbidity, I think one of the more common would be borderline personality disorder with depression, because that's also a mood disorder, and that is super common. And if someone has borderline and has bipolar in the family, it makes sense that the trauma of borderline would also genetically bring out the bipolar disorder. And so that's why you often see the illnesses combined. But I tend to see bipolar as much more genetic based and borderline being a little more focused on life events that create a change in a person.
Why do you think that borderline personality disorder is more common among patients with other psychiatric conditions like substance use disorders or anxiety disorders, depression, or bipolar?
I think it's a really good question. And before, I work as a coach now, so I am also a writer. And I have bipolar, I have a psychotic disorder, and then I have a head injury that led to an anxiety disorder. So I have all of these symptoms. And before I started working with parents and partners, I was of the group, borderline is trauma only. You're not born with it. Because that's how it was seen for a long time. But I now talk with families where borderline, and by the way, borderline and narcissism often go very close together, narcissistic tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
You do see that sometimes in younger children. So I think we are in such a new world right now that the answer to that question is coming from all the people posting their symptoms online, and we have a lot more information now. But I think we also live in sort of a scary, traumatic world for children, and a lot of the trauma that young children experience, it seems to turn into these personality changes that affect a person as they get older. And then, in my opinion, you don't learn the social skills that you need, especially during your teenage years. And it becomes almost pathological, because if you're not stable while you're going through hormonal changes of the teenage years, and then you don't get the social skills, it makes sense that you compensate with behaviors that aren't necessarily great for you, but they help you deal with the pain you're dealing with.
What would you say some of those behaviors are that help you deal with the pain?
I think the main thing, if we're going to talk about borderline, that, and I have a lot of friends with borderline because I work in mental health, they describe to me the feeling of a rising emotion inside that literally makes them feel like they're not going to survive. So let's say someone breaks up with you. A regular person feels pain when they have a breakup. They feel worry about the future. The way people with borderline describe it is that it's a bottomless pit of emotion that hurts so physically that they have to lash out in some way, either towards another person or towards their own body, and that's the self-mutilation that you often see with borderline, and it creates an endorphin response that releases the pain. And so that's one of the characteristics of borderline that you don't see as much in bipolar, and that would be either cutting or causing an extremely intense argument to diffuse the internal emotion that you're feeling. And of course, the results of all this is everything gets worse. But in the moment, the body calms down and you actually feel better by either harming yourself or harming someone else.
Interestingly, I was just reading an article with Glenn Close, who, you know, played the lead in the movie Fatal Attraction. And that mm-hmm. character, who, if you remember, was basically like stalking and having this huge reaction to at being kind of broken up with after a one night stand, was saying that she felt that it was really misrepresented because it made her seem like just crazy when she probably was bipolar or borderline personality.
I agree with that. So that movie is a remake of Play Misty For Me. And Play Misty For Me played the character of the Clint Eastwood movie. Played the character in the same way, almost exactly the same. And the minute you watch it, if you're in mental health, you're like, that's borderline. And I agree in the past, because we didn't know how to deal with that we would say, oh, that's just some crazy lady. And by the way, men can have borderline as well. But now, because we have more understanding, you look back at the way borderline, bipolar, schizophrenia were treated in movies, it's much easier to see. Oh my gosh, she probably is mentally ill. And you know, Glenn's sister, Jessie Close, who's a friend of mine, is an amazing advocate for mental illness because she has schizoaffective disorder. So Glenn Close has changed the world of mental illness through her advocacy work. And so if she says that, I totally agree.
Well, that's why she has a problem with it, because of this work that she's doing with mental health and awareness. Is she, in looking back, well, even at the time, she said she really disagreed with how the movie was going to end with her.
The rabbit.
Yeah, well, not just that part, but with her being a murderer, it kind of took away from having any sort of empathy for the fact that she actually needed help, that she was mental, had an illness?
One of the issues that I'm very open about and that I think is very difficult, how do you have empathy, though, for somebody whose symptoms are so destructive? So my co-author, Dr. John Preston, is actually a borderline expert and writes books on the topic. So he's trained me for many, many years about the differences between borderline and bipolar. In bipolar, we are episodically horrible. There's no question about it. We have an illness called one symptom called dysphoric mania, and we can just be rotten.
Right.
But usually in between that, we will come back and go, oh my goodness, what just happened, and get on with our lives. But imagine being so ill that your borderline symptoms don't allow you to have a break. So the people in your life want to have empathy, but because you can't take a break from what you're experiencing, the person with borderline either pushes away or, you know, that's the push me, pull me illness. And eventually people, even though you want to have empathy, cannot keep handling the behavior of the person with untreated borderline. So it's actually a 50-50 kind of issue. So it's not that people don't care. It's that how do you continue to be with someone who can't control their symptoms? And I think that's one of the main problems that happens in borderline.
Absolutely. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to In Your Right Mind with Dr. Tanmoy Sharma, and we're discussing bipolar disorder and borderline disorder.
About 70% of people with borderline personality disorder report a history of physical and or sexual abuse.
Uh-huh.
And Dr. Webb, feel free to give us your views as well. The childhood traumas, they could contribute to symptoms such as alienation, the desperate search for protective relationship, the eruption of intense feelings that characterize borderline personality. There's 30% of people that suffer from physical abuse, do not develop borderline. So is it kind of a contributing factor? I'm just thinking of sort of a Venn diagram where you've got the genetic contribution, you've got environmental contribution, but also certain things in the environment. We talked about the family earlier in the show and the neglect of emotions. But what about this history of physical and sexual abuse?
Well, I would say that one of the main forms of abuse that contributes to the development of borderline personality is emotional abuse. And emotional and physical abuse often tend to go together, certainly not always. But I think there are children who are physically abused at times who are less vulnerable to becoming borderline personality. And it's the lack of emotional safety and predictability that either goes along with that or is rampant in the household. In addition to that, you know, combined with the genetics we already talked about, that is really the biggest cause.
And Dr. Webb, isn't there also a connection between narcissistic parents and children with borderline?
Yes, and that is because narcissistic parents are not paying attention, and they are raising their child as an extension of themselves. So narcissistic parents are at great risk of being very unpredictable and inconsistent to the child, and also basically ignoring the child's feelings and treating the child's feelings like they are bad or wrong when they're inconvenient for the parent. And so, yeah, narcissistic parenting is definitely a risk factor.
We're going to answer this and much more when we come back. You're listening to In Your Right Mind, brought to you by Sovereign Health. We'll be right back.
Are you or a loved one struggling with addiction as well as a mental health condition? At Sovereign Health, our clinicians target and treat substance use disorders and a variety of mental illnesses at the same time. We provide evidence-based dual diagnosis treatment services for adults and adolescents based on their clinician's customized rehabilitation plan. Call Sovereign Health Dual Diagnosis Program at 866-866-0534. That's 866-866-0534 or visit sovhealth.com.
Is your battle with mental illness or addiction a daily struggle?
Everybody was an immature adult wanting this treatment.
Sovereign Health's Power Program uses evidence-based treatment to create a lasting recovery in an environment suited to women over 40. Start your recovery at Sovereign Health with the Power Program today. Call 866-202-0303. That's 866-202-0303. Or visit us at sovhealth.com.
For people that need help, this is the place to do it.
Are you tired of struggling with your mental health or addiction? Sovereign Health's Prime program aims to help men over 40 overcome mental illness and chemical dependency in an environment suited to their age and needs. Enter a state of lasting recovery with Sovereign Health and get your life back. Call 866-201-8804. That's 866-201-8804. Or visit us at sovhealth.com.
Talk Radio.
790 KABC.
We're back with In Your Right Mind with Dr. Tanmoy Sharma. I'm Stephanie Wilder-Taylor, and we've been talking about borderline personality disorder with best-selling authors Julie Fast and Dr. Janice Webb.
Well, let's talk about the course of borderline personality disorder. We know it manifests in early adulthood, but symptoms of it, example, self-harm, can be found in early adolescence. You know, this is not unusual. We know that, for instance, antisocial personality disorder, we have some childhood traits that tell you that somebody might develop antisocial personality disorder when they grow up. So as individuals with borderline personality disorder, as they age, their symptoms and severity of illness, do they stay the same or do they diminish?
Well, I'm not sure what Julie will say about this, but I do know of some studies that indicate that borderline personality disorder does tend to mitigate as a person grows older for most people. It has a tendency to sort of mellow a little bit. And with treatment, you know, that's a whole nother story. But left untreated, for many, it does sort of start to get less intense.
I agree with Dr. Webb. So the latest research does show quite differently from bipolar disorder.
Yes.
And this is once again where the two illnesses really do part ways. With bipolar, without treatment, you're going to get worse as you get older. With borderline, it's shown that around age 40, that the symptoms start to diminish. So there are a lot of positives there.
So almost 40 to 50% reduction in symptomatology by 2 to 3 years, and almost 80% by 10 years, I think, is, if I remember a study correctly, I don't remember the details of it, but those kind of figures seem to have been there. And the fact that I was talking earlier on about relapse, that borderline patients hardly ever relapse, that's quite interesting. It's different from certainly the other parts of mental illness.
Yeah, I think it's because in order to recover from borderline, you have to learn a lot of really vital, valuable, useful life skills. And once you have skills like that, you don't lose them. They become part of who you are and part of your personality. So it's a very stable kind of recovery.
So what are some of these skills that we can teach people or that they can be taught to someone with that disorder? But,
and also real quick, Stephanie, one thing to remember too is that once again, with bipolar, it's completely different. You can have all of the treatment in the world. You can have learn, you can do CBT, you can take your meds, but our episodes will continue to break through for a lot of us simply because it's genetic and the mania and depression can be so strong. I think it's an enormous positive that borderline reacts so well to treatment and that it diminishes as you get older. People with borderline and their family members need to hear that news.
I have a friend who is bipolar, and one of the things that really helps her is just having loved ones around her to say, you're sounding a little manic, you know? And she never thinks she is at the time. And that, so
we
sometimes
never think we're manic.
Right. So sometimes I have to literally, I've known her for 25 years, so I have to point out specific behavior in a non-aggressive kind of judging way, and then just say, oh, I'm noticing your speech pattern is a little faster, or I'm noticing that you're getting in little arguments with people or whatever. And then she has to take a little time and take a look at it and then go see her psychiatrist and upper meds or adjust or, but without, I noticed that, and she has a really loving partner that does the same thing for her. But I noticed that it was much worse before she had a partner, you know, when there wasn't somebody to kind of monitor her and keep that in check.
Well, I think that's very true. And then the issue is also is that bipolar is actually not that difficult to diagnose. I actually think it's pretty easy. And once you get the right treatment, it's not that hard to see what's going on. You can tell someone's manic, someone's depressed, and you can make lists of what's going to happen. And Dr. Webb can speak to this. Borderline is so much more emotional. It's so more related to relationships than bipolar disorder is. So Dr. Webb can probably give a better idea of what the treatment is for borderline. That's actually quite different from usually 50% medication and management and lifestyle changes that really helps bipolar. I think borderline, especially because it works so well with DBT, is more emotionally based, and Dr. Webb can probably speak to that more.
For people that are dealing with somebody who has borderline personality disorder, what are some ways, you know, somebody who maybe has a parent or a partner, what are some ways that they can reduce conflict?
The best thing to do is also very, very hard to do, but it's extremely helpful. And that is having good boundaries with the person and recognizing that this person is reacting to their own internal world and not you so much. So if you can resist the pull towards being placed on a pedestal, and if you can try not to react too much internally or externally, get devalued or rejected, and just basically understand that you're dealing, what you're seeing is emotion. It's not reality. And try to stay as stable yourself and as non-reactive yourself as you can is very helpful. But I'll add into that one thing, which is people with borderline are very, very sensitive to other people's emotions. It's almost like they have a built-in sonar, and you can't fake it with a person who has borderline. They will see it in a second. So you can't be fake with them either.
Can we talk about treatment? Let's concentrate on this. We've only got 5 minutes. What kind of treatments are available for borderline?
And just to remind you, you're listening to In Your Right Mind with Dr. Tanmoy Sharma, and we're talking about treatments for borderline personality disorder.
Well, this is Julie, and once again, the difference between treating the more traditional illnesses, the anxiety disorders, psychotic disorders, and mood disorders that can greatly be helped by medication. Bipolar is much more of a behavioral therapy, and that's where dialectical behavioral therapy comes in. And the way my co-author John explained it, and I'm sure Dr. Webb could say the same, we have sort of a three-prong reaction to events. The first one is an event happened. Then for stable people, you have a middle space. Hey, how do I feel about that? How do I want to act? And then you take action. In borderline, it goes from event to boom, action. I'm mad. I'm angry. They're leaving me. I'm upset. DBT teaches you to stop and go, what am I feeling? Why is it happening? Where do I want to go with it? Who do I want to be? And it changes lives. And so DBT, which came from Marshall Lennon and from the University of Washington quite a while ago, has really changed the world of borderline.
Yes, absolutely. DBT is the treatment of choice. There are some others, but I'll mention the others real quick. The others are cognitive behavioral therapy to some extent can be helpful. There's also another treatment called schema therapy, which has become more and more recognized and shown to be very effective in clinical trials. And what schema therapy does is it relies on the relationship with the therapist combined with the therapist pointing out consistently and constantly having the client differentiate between their emotional perceptions and the reality, and doing that over and over every single meeting as often as possible and as much as possible sort of trains the brain of the borderline person to start separating their emotions from fact and reality. And so that's also a very effective treatment, and then psychodynamic as well. But all of these, whether it's DBT, cognitive behavioral schema, or psychodynamic, all of it depends very much on a very predictable, nurturing, but not over-nurturing, and caring relationship with the therapist over time.
For our listeners, could you expand on DBT? People talk about DBT as the main treatment for borderline personality. It would help them to know what is it.
DBT really focuses on teaching the client self-knowledge. So just basically paying attention and observing yourself and who you are and starting to recognize, you know, it's hard to tell what's you and what's someone else if you don't really know your own boundaries and who you are as a person. So building self-knowledge, basically a series of modules, and, you know, it's self-knowledge, it's emotional regulation, which Julie just described, it's distress tolerance, so building the ability to tolerate strong feelings and, you know, cope with distress, and it's also cognitive restructuring. So that's kind of like how I describe schema therapy, starting to change your thoughts in reaction to your feelings. So it's all of those areas.
So it sounds
like... And also,
like,
family members and partners can go learn DBT themselves, use it in their own lives, and use it with the person, even if the person with borderline doesn't want to hear about it at first. You can educate yourself. You can read Randy Kreger's book, such as Stop Walking on Eggshells, and you can educate yourself a lot and learn, like Dr. Webb said, how to set up boundaries, even if the other person doesn't want to get involved.
So basically what I'm hearing is if you're open, if you see that you have a problem that you could be borderline, there is helpful treatment available, and it does lessen even if you don't get treatment, maybe after the age of 40, hopefully.
Yes, but remember, by that time, a lot of destruction happens.
Right, right.
So that's why early treatment is so important.
Early treatment.
Yeah, and I just want to add to that as well that the statistics are good for people who stick in treatment for borderline personality, that the treatment actually is far more effective, we've discovered, than was originally thought. People with borderline can get much, much better with therapy if they stick in it.
Well, great. Mm-hmm. I want to thank you guys so much. That's all the time that we have. But thank you to Dr. Janice Webb and your book, Running on Empty, No More, Transform Your Relationship with Your Partner, Your Parents, and Your Children. That's your newest book, right?
Yes, it just came out. Yep.
Oh, great. Wonderful. And Julie, which book do you recommend people pick up of yours?
Well, for general knowledge of Take Charge of Bipolar. But my most popular book is a book for couples, Loving Someone with Bipolar. And then my next book I'm doing right now, we're about working with a publishing company, is a couples workbook for where one partner has bipolar or both have bipolar.
Wonderful.
So I like to do a lot of couples work.
Well, thank you both so much. This has been very informative. And for all of our listeners, don't forget to tune in next Sunday at 5 p.m. for a new episode of In Your Right Mind. And if you like what you hear, you can download this edition of In Your Right Mind as a podcast by going to iTunes or visit inyourrightmind.com to hear this show or previous broadcasts. Thank you, Dr. Sharma.
Thank you, and good night.
We'll see you next week.